They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out all point buttons. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
Attention!
Attention!
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch, Jones, Dutch, Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. You're listening to Stronghold Radio, a special edition here on Friday where we have a live call-in guest on the line. We'll save all the introductions. You know who you're listening to. Well, I had an opportunity through Facebook to meet a fella coming out of Elk City, Oklahoma, a guy by the name of Randy Albert. We were talking about government and justice on a thread, and he told me a story, and I get a lot of stories from people, and usually it's a little of this, a little of that, and you kind of go, yeah, well, that's too bad. But this guy documented his story. It involves government corruption on a huge level, local all the way up. And I've been, if you want to follow along, you need to go to saveacab.blogspot.com. Saveacab.blogspot.com. And we're going to do our best to take you down a path of a really complicated story. And you know how it works here, folks. I'll introduce Randy, and I'm just going to let him tell his story. You guys decide. People have been already watching his videos. I've told some people I put out over the wire that do some homework on this session tonight. We will do as long as it takes to get it out, just like we did with the Shauna Ford story. If it takes a two-hour show every week for the next 3 weeks, we'll do it. And without further ado, can you hear me, Randy?
I can hear you.
Okay, good. We're going to adjust your levels here. This is Randy Albert from Elk City, Oklahoma, and he has a story to tell. And I'm just going to let you go, and If you find, you know, you need some coaxing, I've got a bunch of questions in my head after reading your stuff, so we'll just see how this goes. Okay, brother?
Sounds good. It's quite an ordeal.
Yes, yes. So tell us what happened, or maybe if you want to start this way, tell us, give a quick overview of what's happened to you, and then we'll do the backstory.
Okay. Just now this month, we're starting our 12th year in the taxi service here, and ran into a lot of difficulties over the years. From 2000 to about 2002, we were really busy. Just wasn't a taxi service at all here when I started one. I was working it down at the local grocery store and decided to start this taxi service. So just jumped in there and started just almost overnight. We were just swamped. Before long, we had three vans running. And seemingly we're finding out a lot of information about corruption. It's always been a pretty nasty bunch running Western Oklahoma out here. They've stepped on a lot of people over the years. And about maybe 2002, another group of people started running their own taxi service, and the city decided to regulate it.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted us to get a license through the Corporation Commission and have insurance and everything, which we already did. We got called to City Hall, and I provided everything I had, and the other taxi service came down, and they didn't have anything, so they shut them down on Labor Day weekend in 2002. Wow. And they went Monday morning and got insurance and a license on one van and was still running like five or six of them without anything, you know, doing $3 rides anywhere in town. So I went back to City Hall. My cousin was working there. Her name's Marilyn Williams, and she was the city inspector's secretary. She was the one that was responsible for making sure that all our license and insurance was in order. So I went back down there, and I said, you know, Marilyn, this other bunch is, you know, running a whole bunch of vehicles, and we're pretty sure they don't have the right kind of insurance and everything, which we were spending $10,000 on insurance just for three vans, and that's pretty hard to do for a little secluded place like this.
Mm-hmm.
So she went and talked to the city manager. His name's Guy Hilton. And she comes back and hands me these affidavits and says I got to get driver description of the vehicle, tag number, and everything on all the vehicles that they're using to run their taxi service with. And so I went and done that and brought them back. And, you know, we had already had, we had a problem with the kind of vans we had. You couldn't have two full back seats in them. They could only be seven passenger vans. They have to have four buckets or something. It couldn't be a full size eight passenger van because the insurance wouldn't accept it. And so we went, and it cost me like $10,000 to get all the stuff that we had to do to comply with the regulation. So we did all that, and so they took it in front of the city council and voted not to enforce the commercial insurance. We couldn't believe that they would actually do something like that. It'd be the same thing as a wrecker service running all legitimate and somebody opening up next door to him and running everything without the commercial insurance. It just put the whole thing in a mess. So, you know, I was pretty upset about that for a long time. And that's just kind of how things are done around here. It didn't make sense why they would want to go ahead and regulate us, and then it should have been voted on before it caught, you know, before I had to go and spend all that money. So anyway, went on for about maybe 6 months after that, and the city decides they're going to take over the electric system, where everybody will have to make their electric system, their electric bill, they'll have to pay it to the city, and they're going to, you know, take care of all the electric system, and they come up for a vote where the town would vote whether they wanted the city to take it over or not. And I'm down at a bar one night picking up some people, and, you know, I made the comment to some guys, you know, some of the higher-ups around town that are pretty connected with things that, you know, if anybody needs a ride to vote against this electric system takeover, my company will give them a free ride down there.
There you go.
You know, I just kind of shoot my mouth off, you know, no big deal, just kind of kidding around. And, so it come up for the electric system vote, and but it was overwhelming. They lost. And next thing I know, my cousins called me down to City Hall and saying that I'm in trouble, wanting to know how many people I took down there to vote against the electric system takeover. I didn't even know what she was talking about, and all of a sudden it dawned on me. I remembered saying that in front of these people down at this club one night, and I said, well, yeah, Marilyn, I said that, but I didn't haul anybody down there.
Yeah, you said it as a joke. And then they're accusing you of trying to rig the election by driving some people for free? That's ridiculous.
Right. I mean, what, even if I would have, that's what I told her. I looked at her and I said, okay, Marilyn, what if I would have took them down there? You know, it's a free country, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't go in there and hold their hand and make sure they vote against it. And so after that, the city manager was furious, she said, and I was in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, so I just kind of
That's how you got in their sights. This is building up to it.
That's how we got on their bad side right there. And next thing I know, all the tires are flat on all my vans. We're getting our windows knocked out. There's caustic acid getting put in the gas tanks, and everything's, you know, going downhill in a hurry. And so one day we're sitting around at the house. Me and my kid are sitting in my van fixing to go eat at Western Sizzlin', and five drug task force vehicles pull up.
Here's where it gets interesting,
folks. They get out, and the first one up to the van door is this guy by the name of Hank Twyman. And he asked me if I'd seen this driver that used to work for me. It had been probably a month since he worked for me. I said, no, you know, he hadn't worked for me in quite some time. And then he turned around, and this other guy was behind him by the name of R.C. Daniels, probably maybe what I consider the most corrupt cop in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
He's famous for doing a whole lot of weird stuff to a lot of people around here. And, you know, he turned around and real sarcastically said, oh, he hadn't seen him in a couple weeks. And I said, you know, if you guys hadn't got anything else for me, you're welcome to join us at Western Sizzlin'. And I throwed it in reverse and backed out of it. You know, the driveway left them all standing in my yard. And, you know, there wasn't any reason for five vehicles to pull up over there anyway, even if they were looking for some guy that used to work for me. That was just an excuse. I mean, see, this guy Hilton, the city manager, was an advisor to this drug task force, and it's corrupt's not even the word for how this place is operated. Anyway, so about maybe 10 days later, this guy starts getting a ride about 15, 20 times a day. There's no telling how, a lot of times. I mean, every time we was turning around, the guy was calling for a ride. He's wanting a job. Mm-hmm. So I started doing some checking on him, and didn't find out much good.
Yeah.
And so he starts bothering my wife. She at first made friends with him and his wife and started hauling their kid to school. And next thing I know, he's following her around. He's waving a gun at me all over town, and the police won't do anything with him.
Right.
I mean, I've been to the police about this guy I don't know how many times. And so finally he left some threats on my phone saying the next time anybody called his phone, it was going to be the time the life end.
Yeah.
So I went down to the police department and talked to this police officer, and he said he thought it was enough for a protective order. So we went over to Sarah, and we got a protective order, and came time for the hearing. So we came inside the courthouse, went up to the second floor, and the guy's coming out of the judge's chambers whenever me and my wife walked into the lobby. I knew that something was really wrong. If him and his wife were coming out of the judge's chambers, that seemed to be very troubling. So we went in front of the judge, and he went ahead and put the protective order on the guy and postponed it for 3 months to see what would happen. So we come back 3 months later, me and my wife thinking that, you know, we're going to get a permanent restraining order on the guy because he's done so many weird things to us. And come back, and the guy doesn't even show up for court. You know, usually that's a slam dunk if somebody don't show up to contest it. And the judge dismissed it and wrote on the court papers, I requested it be dismissed, with me sitting there in shock. So, you know, basically we didn't know what to do at this point. You know, everybody's telling me that this Elrod guy is bad news, and he's got too much dirt on the district attorney and the police and knows too much about certain lawyers and city workers, how they're used to traffic methamphetamines and cocaine.
Okay.
And pretty ugly situation in,
well,
in this place.
So basically you've got a guy who's made death threats to you and your family because you refuse to employ him. And you bring it to the attention of the law, which is the right thing to do rather than taking it into your own hands. You show up at court and he's already there making a deal with the judge. And then when it gets contested, he doesn't even show up, and they still dismiss it. So
right then,
there's a ton of red flags going off that this guy, and you said it, he's got stuff on people, he's involved in things, and it goes beyond the good old boy network that I kind of enjoyed in the South when I was down there in law enforcement, but it's scary. Oklahoma has a history of this. And
very troubling the way it works. It's more like just a game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you make them mad, they don't, they could have put me down at any point. I mean, all the police here would have to do is pull me over and give me tickets, but that's not what it's about. It's just about bleeding you a little at a time.
Sure.
You know, just, they enjoy seeing you suffer.
Yeah.
Anyway, so a little further,
went
down the road, and, the guy, all of a sudden, he's really jacking with us after this. He's just really enjoying it, waving a gun at me all over town. And, you know, finally he gets in front of my wife when she's at Walmart. We just had a baby. And my little girl, she's fixing to be 7 years old now. This is right when she was born. He got in front of my wife and my baby girl at Walmart and wouldn't let her back up.
Sure.
And she called me and told me about it, and I just about blowed a gasket. So I decided I'm going to go and grab a hold of the guy and make sure he gets the message to leave us alone. And so I called the guy up and told him, you know, won't you meet me somewhere? And he runs to the police station, hands his phone to a police officer. Mm. I was so mad that I thought I was still talking to him whenever I was talking to this police officer on the phone. And, you know, we pretty ugly words for him, to say the least.
Yeah,
and,
I don't blame
next
you.
Next thing I know, five police officers are surrounding me at this trailer house that I've bought, and I'm fixing up so we can sell it. And they've got a disturbing the peace ticket for me to sign, and it's been... the arresting officer is this Eddie Elrod guy that I had all this trouble with. You know, that's kind of how it works. If somebody makes an accusation against you, they'll sign a complaint and, you know, sign under the arresting officer or whatever. And so all I got to do is sign this disturbing the peace ticket. And I looked at them and I said, you know, I'm not signing that. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm just telling you, man, I haven't disturbed the peace. The guy's been harassing us for a long time. You guys all know it. I've been to the police station. I don't know how many times about this guy waving a gun at me. He's going to pull out in front of my wife and baby where she can't back out of the parking spot at Walmart.
Kidnapping. You know,
that's basically the last straw. You're either going to do something about it or I'm going to do something about it. You know,
right.
Take your choice. Next thing I know, the guy with the ticket book throwing it on the ground, all five of them grab a hold of me, throw me in a cop car, and so I go to jail and, you know, cuffed him pretty good.
Yeah.
And so we get to court, and this guy's in court, and I'm going to plead guilty. Now, I'm going to plead not guilty on this disturbing the peace ticket. So
right.
This guy's sitting next to the city attorney. City attorney's name Steve Holloway. And so we're all sitting there. This guy's on one side of the city attorney. I'm on the other side. And Steve wants to know what's going on, so I tell him. And this guy had been into so many different things. You know, it's unbelievable he was able to get by with all this. And so I tell him what's going on, and Steve says, I'm going to plead guilty to this, or I'll never have a friend on the police department again. The city manager, city attorney was telling me that.
That's basically a
threat.
I said,
well, Steve, I really don't have any friends on the police department anyway. You know, I'm going to plead not guilty.
Yeah.
This guy was terrorizing us, and I had to, you know, the judge wouldn't do anything about it. Police wouldn't do anything about it. When it comes to your family, you've got to do something yourself, if nothing else. I mean, you got to take the law into your own hands, and so be it. You know, I told him, you know, I'm going to plead not guilty. He goes, I'm going to tell you one more time. I'm going to ask the judge for jail time if you don't plead guilty.
There you go.
And I said, you know, jail time on a disturbing the peace ticket? That's
coercion.
A misdemeanor that doesn't carry any jail time. He goes, I'm telling you straight up. And I said, well, you know, not guilty, Steve. I'm not going to plead guilty. His face turns beet red, and he points at this chair on the other side of the room and says, get over there. So I got over there, and they got the cop up on the stand, and Holloway cross-examines the cop, and, you know, comes my turn to cross-examine the cop. So I got up, and I said, you know, it was Joel Pierce is the cop's name. Really good guy. I mean, the guy's still on the police department here.
So there are
and,
some good ones.
Really, there are some very good police officers here that, you know, you just have to try to do the best you can when you're in a situation like these guys are. You know, you can't go against the grain and expect to try to clean any of this up. It's just too corrupt here to try to change anything.
Right.
The whole thing's going to have to crash in order to for anything to happen. So I looked at Joel and I said, Joel, you got any kids? He goes, yeah, Randy, I got a couple kids. I said, what would you do if somebody like this was chasing your wife and baby down and you'd already been to the judge and the police so many times and they wouldn't do anything about it? And I'll haul away the city attorney's objection. And I said, you know, that's all I have, Your Honor. So the judge says, okay, you know, has anybody got anything else to say? And I said, you know, that's it. And he looked over at the city attorney and he said, no, that's it. And he goes, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to find you guilty, but I'm going to give you half your money back. And Holloway was like, well, wait a minute, Your Honor. He's already posted bond to get out of jail. We had to arrest him because he wouldn't sign the complaint. And the judge says, okay, that's all right. We're going to mail him a check for half his money back. And so, you know, after that, this guy thinks he's a bounty hunter, this guy that we had all this trouble with, and he's going all over town still waving a gun at me. And we're having, he follows me everywhere I'm going. It's just unbelievable. That they won't tell him to back off.
Yeah.
You know, it's the task
now,
that's pushing him to do this.
Okay, a couple of things. What's the time frame on that when the court case happened? And is that before or after he threatened to burn down your house?
That was after. See, when he threatened to burn down my house, that's when we got the protective order on
it. Sure, okay. And then
and,
what year and date did you go to court on that when they got you for disturbing the peace?
That was 2003.
Okay, wow. So this is a long, yeah, okay.
Right.
Just trying to get the time frame here.
And anyway, so when he thinks he's a bounty hunter, he picks up this guy, and the bonds lady won't pay him for bringing him in. Her name's Bonnie Galmore. She runs Bonnie's Bail Bonds, and she doesn't recognize his authority to bounty hunt, so she won't pay him. So he goes over to courthouse. Inside the Beckham County Courthouse, inside the court clerk's office, threatens to kill her in front of the court clerk, and they arrest him. He's got methamphetamines in his pocket, loaded firearms. the whole nine yards. I'm almost certain it was five or six felonies he was charged with. Possession of CDS with a firearm and commission of a felony. I don't know, a whole bunch. I printed it all out on a computer, and so we started going to his court appearances. About maybe two or three court appearances, all of a sudden he hires a lawyer out of Cordell by the name of Scott Mason. Cordell's about 40 miles from here. Scott Mason, pretty good lawyer for this area. Even Johnny Cochran couldn't do what the Scott Mason guy did, though. Okay. He come back to court about maybe the third time, and all of a sudden everything's erased like it never happened, like he never even went inside the courthouse.
Right. And now this this happens a lot, and you know, I don't mean to jump the gun on you, but I've got people in my life where I've checked them out, and that kind of thing happens, and they usually end up being informants for the FBI or something when we do background
right.
checks, and you find their criminal record's gone. They've been taken out of the system so they can be used by the goons in the system.
Right, right. The guy was definitely a CI, confidential informant minimum, a lot more than that. He was moving a lot of weight for some pretty important people here. It's just, I couldn't believe. I was pretty upset whenever I found out that they didn't just dismiss it. You know, they erased it like it never happened.
Yes.
And to me, then the guy goes and he gets a protective order on me after this. And so we go to court, and the Judge Hott, the one that saw the protective order the first time, is off down in New Orleans during that hurricane. Or I can't remember. He's in the National Guard. He's the head of Fort something or another, and
right.
he has to go down there. So we have a judge out of Arapahoe taking his place, Custer County judge by the name of Judge Jill Whedon is her name. And so we come in there in front of her, and she wants to know what's going on, and Miss Elrod has all this paperwork where I'd, you know, tried to whip him, and the police had to come and arrest me and everything else. And the judge, he asked me what's going on, and I said, well, you know, I find it pretty odd that Mr. Elrod here can never come inside the courthouse again without a deputy escort. I mean, the sheriff here made it to where this guy could never go into the Beckham County Courthouse again without a sheriff deputy escorting him in there. I mean, one had to bring him in the courtroom.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she didn't have much to say to that, and they went ahead and put the restraining order on me. And so we had to come back, and the Judge Hott was back by the next time we came back, and he dismissed it.
Wow.
So a lot of other stuff kind of smoothed out for a little while, and still pretty upset. I started looking into a lot of things around here on who's connected to who. And first day of 2007 gets here, and none of my phones will work. I mean, I'm telling you,
sure.
nobody can call me. I can barely call out. It's so unbelievable. We was with Dobson Cellular at this point, and the city manager had just gotten indicted for what they did is they bought a railroad depot down on Main Street, and it was loaded with asbestos, and he knew it, and he had the DOC, where the Department of Correction Workers, clean it out without any protection.
Oh.
And then they dumped all the asbestos out in the open at our city dump, and one of the supervisors of the city crew warned him about it, and he just shrugged it off, and they called the Environmental Protection Agency over it, and, you know, so the EPA, you know, called a grand jury up, and this guy lied to him and told him, and nobody warned him, and there was so much evidence against him, it was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of stuff went on over this city manager. He's gotten by. Well, I'll go into a little bit further on this as we go along.
Sure.
Well, so anyway.
Keep the chronology.
I'm fighting this phone thing. You know, we're at the beginning of 2007. We get to about February, and I'm talking to a friend of mine that works for the city and telling him all this stuff about this Elrod guy that's went on, and you know, he starts telling me that the guy knows too much about too many people around here, and, you know, he deals dope for the cops.
Oh.
And I said, what do you mean he deals
dope
for the cops? He goes, yeah. you know what it's, you know, we're not talking about uniformed police officers here. We're talking about, you know, the top cop.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like drug task force and,
Stadies.
You know, they're dirty beyond belief. I mean, it's gotten to the point where it's not just corrupt, it's gotten stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he tells me that, he would, you know, call the Federal Communications Commission if this was going on with his phones, and I probably ought to call the U.S. Marshals, you know, see if there's anything we could do about this guy, you know, still bothering us. I mean, we went on all these years, and he's still showing up different places where the wife and kids going, and just being, you know, harassing us.
Government
thug. Anyway, so I go home, get the phone to the Federal Communication Commission in Washington, D.C., and start trying to call it. And the phone call won't connect. I'm trying maybe at least a dozen times. It's repeatedly. It won't ring. It won't give me a busy signal. It won't do anything. And all of a sudden, my other business phone starts ringing. And it's one of my customers that's used me since the beginning when I first started the taxi in 2000. And he tells me that he needs me to come by his house, that not to try to call the FCC anymore. That he needs me to come over to his house immediately.
Oh, wow.
So I go over to his apartment, and he meets me outside. I refer to him as Joe.
Good.
In my blog. Really, truly believe the guy saved my hind end.
Keep him secure.
Or I would probably name his name off.
Yeah, yeah. Keep him secure.
And we go inside his apartment, and he points at a flag on the wall. It says, kill them all, let God sort them out. And I said, yeah, that's a term from Vietnam. He goes, you know, Randy, I came out here to Beckham County when I lived in New York, and I heard about this place. You know, I came out here to join up with this bunch, and, you know, you're in trouble. And I said, you know, what did I do, Bob? And he goes, you've learned too much about the way things work, and you've aggravated some people, and, we got a group of people prepared to give you all the taxi rides you can do if you don't call the Federal Communications Commission. Don't make any waves. Don't make any demands or any threats. And I was looking at him like, you know, Bob, this is crazy. You know, have you been drinking?
Here's the carrot. And, you're giving me the carrot, and then the stick comes later.
Right. Yeah, I got this really bad feeling in the back of my neck because I knew I'd never experienced anything where you just keep repeatedly trying to call a number and it won't do anything. It just sits there.
I know people right now that are having problems just like that, and they're in different groups, different organizations that are poking eyes of the government. It's a common thing they do. It's kind of like gang stalking. They do it to drive you crazy mostly.
I hear you, man. They're real good at it, too. They know what to do to get inside your head where they can drive a totally sane man all the way to his knees.
Yeah, why kill you if they can make you nuts and discredit you?
So I'm asking him, you know, Joe, are you saying that people are going to dispatch my calls to me? He goes, Randy, you ain't got no choice. You got to go along with this deal. You're in a mess, and you can fix all this just by taking these rides. And like I say, don't make any waves with this. The police are scared. The corruption's got so bad that the whole government's going to collapse.
Oh,
and I'm like, you know, Bobby, you know, are you saying that this is a government operation here? And he wouldn't answer me. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew that there was a government tied to the drugs here, and so much evidence points towards that. I don't know. It doesn't do you any good to prove that. They'd probably do something to you if you did prove it.
Evidence would disappear
anyway. He says, you know, the district attorney's got a secret investigator on you, and all I know is his name's Chad. I immediately knew who he was talking about. I'd had so much trouble out of this guy. He tried to start a fight with me inside my van with taking a bunch of people home from the bar and just constantly having little weird stuff with this guy.
Right.
And I said, you know, what do you think they're going to do, Joe? He goes, I don't know, Randy. And I said, you know, are they going to hurt me? And he wouldn't even look at me, you know, like he knew that I was in danger of getting hit.
Yep.
And so we sat there and talked for a while, you know, about the police mainly, about how scared the police are, because everything had gotten so exposed. Everybody knows where, you know, who's moving drugs and which dealers are protected from the police. And they've had to fix so many different things out here so it doesn't ever get to court. You know, the district attorney got tired of fixing things once it gets to court, so they had to create a list of people that can't get busted so they don't have to go and draw all this attention once it gets to court. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have to stop them from getting busted before it ever happens.
Yeah, and who's gonna complain about it if suddenly the evidence disappears? You know?
Right, I mean, so anyway, I leave his house, and I'm definitely looking over my shoulder when I'm leaving. The phone began to ring, and I would go to Walmart, pick a group of people up, and take them somewhere like a bar, and there'd be a group of people waiting outside of that bar for a ride. I would take them to another bar. There would be another group of people waiting outside that bar. It was like that for the next 2 weeks. And, you know, they were all patting me on the back, handing me a $20 bill saying, "You're doing a great job." And it just didn't set well because
this was
I knew
legion.
Better.
This was the bad cops
right,
legion
I mean,
of people, yeah.
It just turned my job into a joke. You know, I didn't want all the rides. I just wanted the phone left alone. You know, it wasn't about money to me all these years. I always help people when their cars are broke down on the side of the road. I wouldn't even know them and, you know, just give them money or whatever. I wasn't in the taxi service for the money. I was in it to, you know, do a good deed for people and keep them from driving drunk and, you know, to
make
help people when they're down on their luck. And
now,
after they were jacked with us all these years, it just isn't, you know, all of a sudden they're going to say, "Oh, it's okay, we're sorry, we'll give you all the taxi rides you could do." After we had struggled and fought this terrorism and all this weird stuff where they had replaced all my business with drug informants and drug dealers and people that really didn't need a ride. They had already almost destroyed us before they even started jacking with the phone.
Well, it sounds like they were trying to drag you into it to make you complicit also by moving these undesirables around. Now, you said something that your informant told you, I think you said, Joe, that they know the government is collapsing, and basically the impression I got, and tell me if I'm wrong, they're trying to create their own like little city-state there so that when the rest of the country falls apart, they'll have the resources and the funds to take control of that part of Oklahoma. Am I out of bounds
Maybe.
On that?
Man, it's just hard. I think these people are already prepared to just bail out of here, all the ones that, you know, when this place does collapse, man, there's going to be a lot of people in trouble if it finally does break up around here. It's just, it's hard to say if there's enough legitimate law enforcement in the government to come here and arrest some of these people. I just don't see it happening.
Right.
You know what I mean? With the former head of the Drug Enforcement Agency claiming that every level of the government is under control of the cartel.
Yeah.
Now, I've read so many different stories about corruption in the government, and you know, the CIA is pretty well
the drug trade
can do about anything they want with drugs.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I don't know how, you know, you can look into so many different conspiracy theories that before long you start to realize that they're not all theories.
They're all part of the same web. Now let's get talk about where Elk City is. You're in the western end of Oklahoma, right?
Right on I-40.
Right.
We're,
now I-40 is known
30
as
miles.
30 miles from
pipeline.
Yep. Now I've been stopped there and searched by your special drug task force people twice. And I've run in with them, so I personally understand what you're talking about in a very small. I have nothing compared to what you've gone through, but I saw it. And they're looking for cash, and they're looking for drugs. And what
right.
happens to the drugs they confiscate?
I've heard a lot of rumors, seen firsthand how they've supplied the crack dealers here with it. They'll take a certain amount of cocaine off the highway and just provide it to these dealers here, and they'll cook their own crack.
What happens when these subjects that are coming from California to wherever on I-40, they show up in court and they know they had a certain amount, but yet then they're charged with a lesser amount? Have you seen that kind of thing?
Right. That's been going on for 35 years here. They'll say they'll arrest somebody with 100 pounds of marijuana, they'll wet it down or something to make up for the different weight that's missing, or they'll just say they only had 5 pounds, and they'll take the other 95 pounds, and the highway patrols have their own certain little network they can move it through. I mean, that's one thing about this area. If you look at the houses the highway patrols are living in, and you compare that to what the ones in eastern Oklahoma are living in, like some shack, yeah. These guys here are living in $300,000 to $500,000 houses. You know, there's a real problem. I mean, the Oklahoma Highway Patrol in this area, there's some good ones, but there's some real dangerous ones that's in control here. I just, if, like I say, if somebody knew the whole thing, you couldn't tell it even if you did know it. I mean, there's no telling what they would do to somebody if they started naming names and telling exactly who's doing what here. It'd be suicide.
Well, anyway, you're pretty brave for coming out. That's why I admire the accuracy and the specificity.
We haven't even got to the other.
I know. That's why I'm telling the listeners it may take a while, you know, to get to the murders and all that other stuff. I want you to take it wherever you want to take it from here. If you're willing to keep talking, we'll just keep going. I got no need to run a commercial or anything because I'm just fascinated by your story. So just take
right,
it and keep
man.
Going
I
with
mean,
it.
I mean, we got some troubling waters here. Ahead here.
Okay.
But anyway, so
get it out in the public
record. Go on for a little while.
Okay.
After I break this deal not to call the FCC, and I start calling the FCC, and doesn't really do much good. I doesn't get anything but trouble. When I called the FCC, the first time I got to really talk to somebody was with a lady by the name of Teresa Kinsey at the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau in Washington, D.C. at the FCC, and I'm on the phone with her, and I'm on my Sprint phone, and all of a sudden I'm telling her what's going on and about this deal that had been made not to call the FCC and about all the trouble I'd had with my phone, and she sounds pretty interested in it. So all of a sudden I got a message on my Sprint phone from a Sprint message center that said Washington and Sprint on it. That's all it said. And, she, you know, I told her what the phone did, and she goes, well, hang up and call the message center and see what it says, then call me back. So I hung the phone up and checked with the message center, and wasn't a message there, so I called her back, and she seems really scared and says she's got an attorney in her office, and best thing I can do is go to Hollywood with the story. And I said, okay, Teresa, that's pretty ugly to be like that. And she hangs up on me.
Yeah.
So, okay, you know, I thought that's cool, you know. So maybe about a month before that happened, I'm sitting at this restaurant with a driver of mine, and all of a sudden a blocked call, a private number comes in on the phone, and he answers it, and he hands the phone to me. He goes, it's Hank with Drug Task Force. I thought he was kidding. You know, a lot of times we'd go over to Drug Task Force and pick up people whenever they would get stopped in their motorhome, and they would take their motorhome, seize it, and take their money away from them. And I would give them a ride to Oklahoma City Airport or the bus station or something. I figured that's probably what it was. So I picked up the phone, and it was Hank Twyme, and the one that was in my yard that day whenever we would pulled out and left him and went to eat at Western Sizzling. And he goes, Randy, it's Hank over at Drug Task Force. We need to see you over here. Usually they'll say, we need you over here, you know, if they want me to pick up somebody. So I thought, okay, I'll be over in 10 minutes. So we drove over to Drug Task Force and pulled in. And about the time we pulled through the gate, which is about maybe 20 yards from their big side door, this big overhead door started opening up on the side in the back of the Drug Task Force. Not only, their office is in the front. I thought, you know, we should have been in the front office if we're going to meet. Not in the back of this warehouse where this big overhead door is. So I pulled up there, and Hank comes out to the van. He goes, we need to see you inside. So, you know, I was kind of jumpy, you know. So I got out, and my buddy's like, man, you going to be all right? And I said, hell, I don't know what they want. So I went inside, and they shut the overhead door down. Miss R.C. Daniel is inside, and this guy is like one snake in the grass, man. He's behind this whole thing that's happened to me. I'd almost guarantee you this Guy Hilton, the city manager, has told these guys to jack with me because I'd made, you know, made him mad over this electric system.
Now, who is he
with? The only thing I can think.
Who is this guy with?
District 2 Drug Task Force.
Okay, District 2.
They're federally funded. They came here in, I believe, 1991. One of the head of it, his name's Larry Dameron. He's graduated here in Elk City and went to Quantico FBI.
So those are the guys in the Black Tahoes? The Black Tahoes out on I-40 that are running?
Right,
okay,
right,
yep, they're the guys that got
me. He's a Quantico FBI and a real good profiler. The guy knows how to, you know, profile people. That's exactly what he did to me and my wife. I mean, they listen to all our phone calls, and once they learn certain things about you, they know how to do weird things to you. So anyway, this Larry Dameron, he's not there. He comes in the story here a couple more months from now when I'm fixing to get some of that in just a little bit. So anyway, they shut down the overhead door, and I walked in, and I said, what's going on? And this R.C. Daniels got a urine cup in his hand. He goes, I need you to fill this cup up. And I said, why? And he goes, well, he heard you was doing drugs. And I said, well, exactly what did you hear? So I took the cup and filled it up right there in front of him. Wasn't any bathroom or nothing. You know, so I handed him his cup. And I said, well, you know, why are we back here in the back of this warehouse? Shouldn't we be out in front of the office or something? And shouldn't there be some witnesses or some video cameras or something?
Wow.
But neither one of them would answer me. And he stuck this stick down in this urine and said, oh, it's hot. It's got everything in it.
Yeah,
I said,
right.
Man, it don't have anything in it. I'm not doing drugs or nothing. Hank goes, we heard you've been making threats towards us. And I said, you know, you guys keep telling me that you heard this or that, but you won't say exactly what you heard. You know, just exactly what was said.
Yep.
And RC said, well, we heard that the Mexican mafia was after you. And I said, no, I think it's more like the game-playing mafia. You know, they've done so many weird things to us that we don't understand why all these games are being played. This little Elrod guy, you know, was sent by you guys. I'm almost certain of it. How is he going to go in the courthouse and have dope in his pocket and loaded firearms? That's enough to put me underneath the courthouse for life. And how's he going to get all this erased off his record? He's been chasing me around and pointing guns at me. Nobody will do anything about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, my phone calls all been blocked, and we've about had enough of this. And Hank, at this time, Hank pulls his gun out of his sidearm and never points it at me, points it down at the floor and says he ought to finish me off right now. And I said, you know, what did I do wrong? I mean, I don't understand why I'm over here right now. And neither one of them said anything, and he opened up the overhead door and said, you're free to go, and he put his gun up. So I got in my van, pulled out of there, made it about a half mile down the road, and got out and started throwing up.
That's exactly what happened to us afterwards. I agree. Yeah, after we had the run-in with these same thugs, maybe even these same guys, there was one black dude and like seven white guys. Stacy and I both.
Black guys fly a highway patrol.
Yeah, we all got sick when they pulled us over in those black Tahoes, and we're going, where's the money? Where's the drugs? And we're like, what? Mm-hmm. And here's the funny thing. We were going along to a Klan rally with a bunch of Klan guys. We were just riding with them. Yeah, we were checking them out because they listened to the show, and everybody knows about this anyway. So when they found all the Klan stuff, they were like, why didn't you just tell us you were in the Klan? I go, I'm not in the Klan. I'm just hanging out with these guys. And they were like, and they got all mad and gave us our guns back and everything. It was funny.
I'm telling you, man, I've heard so many stories about how this drug task force operates. People tell me that they'll get all this marijuana and cocaine and meth, and they have connections with the Hells Angels
yep.
and the Bandidos and everything else, and
yes.
they actually infiltrate these gangs and supply them. And it's, I just don't understand how somebody from Washington, D.C. is not coming down here and looking into some of this.
Well, you know
I mean,
why?
They're taking,
you know,
it's greased off all the way to the top.
I think so, too. They're skimming their tithe. It's just like the Catholic Church and everybody else. They're taking a little bit
all the way to the White House, man,
yep.
with Bill Clinton, all the stuff that he created when Clinton became president, man. That's exactly when it got too crooked. And anyway, they get by with this kind of thing so much, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars off the highway.
Yes.
They're taking. They'd rather have the money than the drugs. And, you know, these guys probably got, you know, just millions of dollars in their basement.
Stashed,
you know, there's more money than they'll ever spend in their life. And, just, I don't know, there's nothing ever in the paper about where the money's going. You know, it's basically their cash cows, this I-40 out here.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. I had a customer that got busted for a meth lab, had all the stuff to make the meth and 2 pounds of meth that he had just got through making. His family hired a lawyer for $15,000. They got to court in front of Judge Hott over at the Beckham County Courthouse, and they presented all the evidence, and the 2 pounds of meth was gone. And the guy started telling this lawyer, "Hey, wait a minute! I had 2 pounds of pure methamphetamine." The lawyer put his finger over his mouth and goes, "Shh!" And the guy got 3 years instead of getting 20 years for manufacturing. He got 3 years and supervised probation.
Yeah.
So that happens all the time. I mean, sometimes they'll go ahead and take the product that these people get busted with, and they have other people that'll go ahead and finish the batch.
Yeah.
You know, it's what they call this meth lab, you know, a batch. They'll go ahead and finish cooking it, and they have all these different people, and they can try to say that they're just putting all this stuff out on the street to trail it. That's exactly what they're doing when it's for pure profit. I mean, they'll do it maybe for, they'll watch people just for maybe better marketing techniques. And
yes.
A place to wipe their feet to make it look like they're actually, they'll bust some little nickel and dime dealers, you know, but ones that are moving 15, 20 pounds of meth a month aren't even getting looked at.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just, it's all about who you know and how much you can grease these guys. You know, they're wiping their feet right and left on people that don't have a chance against
them.
I mean,
it's like the
whole thing.
It's like the Dark Ages with every little kingdom, and they do whatever they want. And if you pass through their kingdom, you got to pay the king. You got to pay his knights.
Right. I mean, this area here, that's why I refer to this area as the Bermuda Triangle of law enforcement, because they make their own rules out here. That everybody's afraid to ask questions up through here because they hear it's Beckham County. Reporter or a lawyer, if I call one of them, they'll find out, you know, it's Beckham County. And all of a sudden, oh, man, we can't help you out there. You know, it's like it's even worse than Chicago or something. So anyway, you know, on with the story here. We go on for after I get drug tested at gunpoint and move on for a little while. You know, I'd already called this local FBI agent in 2003 after this guy got all his stuff erased off his record. And we'll back up for a couple of, for 4 years and go back to that and just to kind of give you an idea that I'd already been to the local FBI agent. His name's Brad Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And I called him up and told him, you know, this guy's jacking with my wife. We'd already been, tried to get a protective order on him. He's waving a gun at me all over town and nobody will do nothing about it. He gets all these felonies erased off his record. I'd like to know how that's possible, Brad. And, he tells me, you know, Randy, there is no corruption in Beckham County. And I was like, well, man, Brad, there's corruption in every county.
Yeah.
And so he says he'll do some looking into it. So I wasn't really satisfied with that. So I picked up the phone after he hung up, and I called the Oklahoma City FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Started talking to this guy, and he goes, well, you'll have to contact the local agent out there. And I said, well, I just got off the phone with him. He goes, oh, you don't trust the local agent, huh? All of a sudden, the local agent comes back on the phone. Well, I told you, man, I was going to meet with you, but meeting canceled. You don't have enough credibility to ask questions about corruption.
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean I don't have enough credibility? You know, I've been in the taxi service here for 7 years. That ought to be enough credibility. And so I think he's at the four-year point at that point. And I don't know. That really got things pretty aggravated, but it was just an innocent deal, you know. I mean, I wasn't satisfied with what he told me, you know. I mean, he's going to tell me that he works with these guys and there is no corruption in Beckham County, knowing good and well that it's like the Twilight Zone. You know, it's not just that there's a little corruption. It's to the breaking point, you know, dangerous type. And anyway, so I still having some major phone difficulties at summer of 2007. It's gotten to the point where, you know, I'm to the breaking point. Everything's in shambles. You know, nobody can call me. I have to sit in front of the bar for, you know, to even be able to get people to come out and get a ride. Nobody can call me. Everybody's afraid. I mean, it's just a joke. They're using cell phone jamming equipment on me. And so anyway, I decided that we're going to call. I switched over to Sprint, and I called this Sprint Nextel corporate executive by the name of Andre Sajaro at the Reston, Virginia office. Told him what's going on. He gives me a Sprint Nextel case number 1463973, I think, and tells me that I need to go to the police station to complain about the phone. He couldn't call me at all. I could only call him if I went to a payphone, and they'd only get a fast, busy signal when he tried to call me. He'd never seen anything about it like it. You know, the guy sounded really shook up, so I had my 15-year-old with me, and so we go to the police station, and the 15-year-old, you know, he just graduated from high school this year. You know, the guy's, he's been through a lot. He's seen, you know, me fight this for so many years. It's unbelievable. He's had trouble out of his phone like this, and, you know, he goes with me, and so we meet with two detectives at the Elk City Police Station, Detective David Pruitt and Detective Bill Gerhold. So I'm talking to them, telling them about this deal that had been presented to me, you know, that I'd have all the taxi rides I could do if I didn't call the FCC and tell them about Hank pulling his gun on me in the back of Drug Task Force and all the other little weird shit that happened. And so next thing I know, out comes the handcuffs, and I'm going to a mental facility. You know, so I didn't understand what I'd done wrong, you know. So,
well, there you go. It's all made up. You're just nuts. Problem solved.
Yeah, that's exactly what they do.
That's
They'll
what they
label
do.
You as a nut, and they can get by with anything they want then. So anyway, I get taken over to Clinton, which is about 25 miles from
Great
here,
name.
To a place they call Red Rock Behavioral Center. And this doctor that is the head of this deal, a lot of people refer to her as Dr. Sarah Coyle.
Oh,
you know, you get on too deep with corruption, she'll prescribe you Sarah Coyle. She tried to give me a drug called Invega, and I pretended like I took it and, you know, spit it in the trash, and
it's
for schizophrenia.
Yes.
And I still have it. I made sure I kept the samples that she sent
good
home with
you.
Me, and so I get out of there after 3 days. None of them would even talk to me. The counselor.
Hello, are you there? Uh-oh. We may have lost him. You're still there on the signal, but I can't hear you. If you can hear me, Randy, go ahead and call in. They may have just heard the signal and cut it off. Folks, this is kind of the weird way things happen here. Okay, he shut off. I'm going to try to call him. I'm going to reach him, see if they want to block him. I'll call him back. Make my fingers do the walking here. Let's see if I can get through to him. Randy, if you've got somebody listening over our feeds, I'm trying to call you back. This stuff kind of happened when we were doing, remember, when we were doing Shauna Ford? We can have people on for hours, and now it's blocked.
That's Randy with the cab.
Are you there?
Get this message. Call me at 580-8212.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, we tried calling you back. I kind of think it's funny. This happened when we were talking to lawyers on a death sentence call we were doing. We never have this problem. So we're glad you're back.
No,
we're glad you're safe. They probably are listening. So we've got a bunch of people
on there. Yeah,
sure,
man. So it might just be a fluke.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
honest man.
You know, we get in. This guy gets in at this bar, and he's wearing an Army cap and an Army shirt. And he gets in, and I know his sister. Her name's Georgia, and I gave him a ride quite a few times. I didn't really know him like I did his sister. And he gets in, and he starts telling me that I'm going to have to go along with what the people that run this town want me to do. And
right.
I said, you know, that's fine, but I can't deal with this phone deal anymore. They're going to have to lighten up on the phone. And he starts telling me he used to drive a cab in Chicago, and I'm in too deep. And I said, you know, a lot of people around here know what's going on. I mean, the whole town's scared of this crazy bunch. There's no reason for them to be beating on me. And so we get out on Main Street. We're driving down Main Street and come to about where the lumber yard is on South Main down here. And all of a sudden, I'm in the right-hand lane, and here comes a pickup, a white pickup, Chevy pickup, and a maroon Chevy Blazer, and they pass me in the left-hand lane, and both of them get out in front of us and just stop. And there's bullet holes in the tailgate. And so this guy starts telling me, you know, I'm telling you, man, you're going to have to go along with what these people want you to do. We're talking about 7 o'clock in the evening right on Main Street, you know, and they won't move. I'm trying to swerve over to the oncoming lane to pass them, and they're swerving over there. And, heck, I just been out of the nut house about an hour, you know. I'm already pretty upset. And so I told him, man, I'm going to call the cops, man. I had enough. He goes, won't do you any good. Yeah. I'm telling you, man, you're in too deep. And so I said, whatever, you know, I'm calling the cops, man. So I got my phone and dialed 225-1212, which is our local police station, and the dispatcher comes on. And I'm like, yeah, this is Randy with the taxi service. I'm down on Main Street. I got a white Chevy pickup and a maroon Blazer that's got me stopped. They won't let me move down Main Street, and there's bullet holes in the tailgate. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking she's going to say, yeah, we'll send some people right down there. I should have called the highway patrol, I did.
Yeah.
But she tells me, yeah, we know they won't hurt you. You better keep your mouth shut, and hangs up on me. And I'm sitting here going, I'm looking at this guy next to me, and he's going, man, I'm told you, you're in too deep. You know, you're in bad trouble with this bunch. And I'm just, like, almost paralyzed. I couldn't believe I've lived in this town. You know, I was born here 44 years ago, and you can't imagine the feeling you get when something like that happens. You lose all the trust you have in law enforcement in this area. You know what I mean? That's just an ugly black mark on this town, if you ask me. I mean,
well,
they can try to say I'm crazy.
Yeah. What's scary about
anyway,
this is this sounds like one of those bad 1960s Southern corrupt police shows, you know.
That's right.
And it's real. Now, we're coming up on a break here, Randy. I want to go another hour with you if you can. Are you up to it, or do you want to come back on Monday? It's completely up to you.
We can go another hour. I think I can finish it in an hour.
Okay.
We're starting to get to the nitty-gritty.
Okay, what we'll do is we'll go ahead and take our station break because we have networks that pick us up and they have to run commercials. I'm going to bring down your audio. You can just hang out and listen to us talk, and we'll be back in about 3.5-4 minutes, and we'll be going out over even more networks. I'll do a little synopsis for everybody, get them up to date, and then you pick up where you left off, and I'll tell people that if they missed it, they got to listen to the first hour. We'll be right back.
Sounds good.
Okay, stand by, Randy. We'll be right back on Stronghold Radio.
He sort of looks like Darth Vader with his gun and his radar and his flashing blue light. He drives a government squad car full of all kinds of hardware to handle the angry mob. And with his badge on his shoulder and his gun in his holster, he'll tell you he's just doing his job. Watch out for martial law. When he's out there watching after, if he's a tool of the bankster, he's a badge-wearing gangster, an agent straight from Interpool. Watch out for martial law. He's there to prove who owns a muscle and might. And he just might pull you over to the side of his shoulder, cause he cannot see your license plate light. Because he cannot see your license plate light. Ain't it a frightening feeling when you're behind the wheel and you see him there? When you're round in the corner and he's right there behind you in your rearview mirror. Is he a foe or a friend or this public defender we see on our TV screen? Or just some vain reckless power gaining strength every hour, a threat to the American dream? Watch out for martial law. When he's out there watching after, if he's a tool of the bankster, he's a badge-wearing gangster, collector of the revenue. Watch out for martial law. And if he's tailing you, you better not run. Just read the news in the papers, covering some of his capers. He's dangerous when he's aiming that gun. That boy is dangerous when he's aiming that gun. Thank you. he was part of the dream when we could count on him. But now he sold his allegiance to those socialist schemers and their every whim. Now I've got nothing against him if he's out defending my country, my Bill of Rights. But if he's out there abusing all those powers he's using, then maybe we should turn off his lights. Watch out for martial law. When he's out there watching after you, if he's a tool of a bankster, he's a badge-wearing gangster, an agent straight from Interpol. Watch out for martial law. He's there to prove who owns a muscle and might, and he just might pull you over to the side of the shoulder, cause he cannot see your license plate. Like, watch out for martial law. And if he's tailing you, you better not run. Just read the news and the papers covering some of his capers. He's dangerous when he's waving that gun. I said you better be wary if he's had a bad hair day, because he's dangerous when he's aiming that gun. He can be dangerous when he's aiming that gun. That boy is dangerous when he's aiming that gun.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
There's rebellion in the wind.
A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
All for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Without all points bulletin, we'll send roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones
Radio Program.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Stronghold Radio. I'm your host, Dutch Jones, coming to you from Cahuilla, California. Welcome to all our affiliates. Liberty Tree Radio, Indiana Freedom Talk Radio, the folks rebroadcasting us everywhere. I've heard we're even on Watchman Radio. We're all over the place. And a big thank you to our pod people who download when they can. And thank you to Olima for managing our archives. And this is one of those shows, folks, if you missed the first hour and you're just tuning in, I just got some emails. People are tuning in now because of the time difference. They didn't have a chance to. They're in California. Go back to the archive when it's posted. You've got to hear this. On the phone, I have Randy Albert. This is a man from Elk City, Oklahoma, a taxi cab company owner who has been dragged into the dirt, called crazy, arrested, threatened by drug task force officers, pulling their weapons, because he speaks out about corruption that is going on in Elk City, Oklahoma. And you've got to listen to the first part. We're going to continue with the story because even the second half, what he's telling, you don't even without the first half, I've read through his stuff. If you go to his page, it's saveacab.blogspot.com. Folks in the chat room, I've posted it in there for you. Saveacab.blogspot.com. You can read along, but listen to the first hour if you're just joining us. Randy, are you there? Are you still alive, or did they get you in the middle of the fight?
I'm still here.
Okay, great. Okay, just pick it up where you left off, Randy, and just keep the story rolling. Make all the connections. Tell us what's going on there in Elk City.
Sound good. I just got stop from moving down Main Street. That's the point I left off all ago with vehicles that had bullet holes in the tailgates and got off the, called the police, and the dispatcher tells me, yes, we know they won't hurt you, and she hangs up on me. So the vehicles start moving out of the way. I followed the maroon blazer, and he pulled in behind our local police station. I was in shock, I think. Mm-hmm. I didn't know exactly what to do. I didn't know whether to pull in behind him, or I didn't think that was such a good idea. So I went on and took this guy to his house that I had with me, and he didn't have much to say for sure. He just told me that I was going to have to go along with what these people wanted me to do, and I couldn't keep on speaking out about these things that had happened to me. And so I don't know, I was just so distraught, I didn't know what to do. So I called CNN in Atlanta, Georgia, and was on hold with them for 3 hours. Finally, the phone started ringing, rang for 59 minutes straight, and the guy with the Middle Eastern accent came on and told me I had 15 seconds to tell my story. And gave him a good 15-second little rundown of what just happened, and basically that was it. I didn't know what to do, so I called Channel 5 in Oklahoma City, and a guy picked up the phone and wouldn't identify himself, claimed he was a reporter with Channel 5. I told him, you know, that my phone calls were being blocked, and we'd had this deal presented to me not to call the FCC, and I'd have all the business I could do. And the guy says, okay, you know, if you're the taxi out in Elk City, you've been the taxi there for 7 years, what's the phone number to a couple of motels? I thought that was a little odd, so I gave him the number to Motel 6 and another motel, and he goes, well, what's the number to the police station? I said, you know, man, don't call the cops, because I'm already in a mess with them, and I'm reporting all this corruption, and if you call them, it's just going to really mess things up. He goes, I won't call them. What's the number? So I gave him the number, you know, 580-225-1212, and he said, well, we can't really help you with anything like that here at Channel 5. Sorry. I said, okay, you know, thanks for your help. You know, I appreciate it. So he hangs up, and about 5 minutes later, the police show up at my house. Me and my wife and my friend are sitting on the couch watching TV, and this officer, Brett Moore, knocks on the door, and I open the door, and he goes, Randy, did you call Channel 5? I said, yeah, Brett, I called Channel 5. Is that against the law? And he goes, no, not really, but Channel 5 called the station, and they don't want you calling there anymore. Definitely. I said, oh, is that right? You know, okay, you know, I won't call there anymore. So he leaves. I load up my van. I drive 125 miles to Channel 5 in Oklahoma City and caught a reporter outside. And I said, hey, looky here, you know, this just got through happening. And he goes, well, who'd you talk to? And I said, the guy wouldn't tell me his name. He goes, nobody's going to answer the phone here that won't identify themselves.
They routed your phone.
We don't do business like that.
Yeah.
I said, I know, it was kind of bizarre. The guy started asking me what the phone number was to a couple of motels, and the police came over to my house and told me y'all didn't want me calling here anymore. He goes, well, you know, let me see your phone. I showed him where I'd called this phone number to Channel 5 and showed him the duration of the call, which is like 7 or 8 minutes. And he goes, well, wait in your van. I'll come back out here in just a minute. So, man, about 30 minutes went by. I'm thinking, oh, no, you know, they're probably going to call the police. If they really did call the police in Elk City. And see, the local newspaper reporter had already told me that if anybody will look into it, then KOCO Channel 5 in Oklahoma City will help you. And so that's why I'd been calling them. And so here comes a reporter out, Mark Offgram. He's one of my Facebook friends. And I'm under Randy J. Albert on Facebook. And I'd made friends with so many reporters. I got almost 5,000 friends on Facebook. About half of them are in the news media. And we got some really incredible friends, including the lieutenant governor and a whole bunch of really important Harvard lawyers. And anyway, so he comes out with this news camera, and he goes, well, we checked the phone records. Nobody from that phone number called here at the station today, and it sounds like you're in a real mess. I'm going to give you 30 minutes to tell your story on this news camera. I'm thinking, all right, you know, finally something's going to get done, you know. So he breaks out the news camera, and I went over, you know, some of the stuff that I talked about in the first hour of this show here, and he said, you know, they'll make some calls and see what they can do. And so I'm thinking, you know, finally maybe something's going to happen over this. And so I'm leaving Channel 5, and all of a sudden my message, a text message comes through on my phone that says your telenav pin has been changed to 2222. I'm thinking, well, what's telenav? I have no idea what I'm on a prepaid phone anyway, and I didn't know what it was. So I got home and Googled this telenav, and it's a GPS system where people can track you.
That's exactly
and,
what
you know, like
doing.
Say somebody wants to keep an eye on where their kid is or something, they can know, you know, how to track them down. And so I Googled this telenav to find out about my account, and the email address on it was set up under Santa at the North Pole. And I called telenav and I said, hey, nobody set up a telenav on my phone. I don't know what it's what's going on. And the guy tells me it was done at the local AT&T facility here, and prepaid
that.
Phones don't even support telenav. You know, there wasn't any way that my phone should have even had telenav on it, so I thought that was a little strange. So I decided that it's time to call the local FBI agent
again. Yeah.
So I called him up, and his number is 580-225-6000, and he answers the phone, and I tell him, Brad, I need to meet with you, man. This deal's gotten out of control. I'm in a mess, and I need your help. And so he agrees to have me come down to his office, and he's on the corner of Broadway and Jefferson at the top of the Apple Annie building. It's one heck of a setup. So I'm on my motorcycle. I'm on my way down to his office, and this pickup swerves at me on the corner of Washington and Country Club, and almost runs me over. The guy, I thought, was just some nut. And so I pulled over to find out what his problem was at the funeral home parking lot. It's on the corner, and he pulls up next to me. He's got a couple of guys with him, and it's the guy that owns a local glass shop here. And I'm thinking he's going to apologize. I've known the guy for a long time. He had put the windshield in my pickup one time, and he pulls up next to me and asks me if I know where to dump a load of hot asphalt.
Hmm.
I didn't really know what to make
what
of that.
That mean,
and I said,
yeah.
You know, you guys are going to have to leave us alone. You know, we've been through a lot. I just want to you know, do my job, and I don't care what you guys are doing. You know, you're jacking with me, and there's no reason for it. We haven't told on anybody, haven't named names, still haven't even to this day named names on who does what around here. It's really the only reason I can still even move around this town.
Yeah.
And so I went on and pulled up at the FBI deal and ring his bell on his door, and he comes down and unlocks it, and we walk up the stairs and go through a metal detector like you would go through at the airport or something. It's a really sophisticated setup. The guy looks like he wasn't anything, wasn't accusing him of anything. You know, when he said, you know, Randy, I'm not jacking with your phone, I got this real weird feeling on the back of my neck like it was him. And just, you know, being up against the FBI when you're just a cab driver is not a very good feeling. I mean, they don't get by with all this stuff because the Boy Scouts are covering for them out here.
Right.
You know, some heavy-duty law enforcement that's overseeing this out here. They're allowing certain people to traffic, you know, massive amounts of drugs. And so I tell them, you know, Brad, this deal's went too far. You know, these guys jacked with my wife and my kid, and they've damaged all our vehicles and blocked our calls, and I've been accused of things and drug off to the nut house and, you know, vehicles with, you know, tailgates all shot up with bullet holes getting out in front of me, is that the police is actually telling them to do it, and that's out of control even in Chicago. You know what I mean? That just for the police to actually do something like that to me is just asking for it.
Right.
You know, that's not going to scare anybody that darn bad. If they want to scare somebody, I think they get some vehicles with some machine guns mounted on them or something. They want to really scare me.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, nobody's going to be afraid of a couple little punk teenagers with bullet holes in their tailgates. You know, that's just Anyway, so I'll leave his office, and, you know, got this really bad feeling. The phone's still so messed up that just couldn't make a living, but I'm not going to give up. You know, I'm just bound and determined to beat this deal. So we started having a lot of trouble with the Sprint phone. I'd been with them for maybe a month or so, and I start calling Sprint a lot, complaining about it just constantly. And next thing I know, I call Sprint with all three of my Sprint phones at the same time. And the boy got one. We had a plan where we had three phones on them, and I called 611 on all three of them at the same time. And I'm talking to three different operators at the same time. I'll say, like, hang on a minute, somebody's at the door. I'll put that phone down, grab the next one, and start telling this representative something, and then I'll put that one down saying, hang on a minute, you know, got to do something or another. And finally, I get down to where I'm on one phone with one rep, and the operator starts telling me that Embark has hijacked my Sprint service. They've taken over my Sprint account. And I said, Embark, I've never heard of them. It's spelled E-M-B-A-R-Q. They're now CenturyLink, and it's a Fortune 500 company. Sprint had got too big at one time where it had to branch off into this Embark, and, you know, they don't even do business in Oklahoma, which was so strange about it. So she goes, well, I don't know what to tell you. Embark has got your account. Here's the phone number to them. Well, I've never seen anything like that. And, well, can you get me a supervisor on the phone, please?
Mm-hmm.
So she gets a supervisor on the phone. They triple check it. I'm sure enough with Embark, and nobody had seen anything like it. They were just baffled. And so they give me the number to Embark, so I pick up the phone and I call this Embark at 800-877-7707. And this lady there starts telling me that I don't know why Sprint would tell you you're with Embark. We don't have your account here. I said, okay, you know, since the phones won't work, we've been through heck trying to get our phones to work, and if Sprint already thinks I'm with you, why don't I transfer over to you?
Uh-huh.
So she thinks that's a good idea, starts setting me up an account, and says I'll need to call back in about 10 minutes, and she'll give me a confirmation. So I called her back about 10 minutes later, and she starts telling me that Embark don't do business at all in Oklahoma. And I said, well, you just told me a while ago you were going to set me up an account. What's going on? She goes, well, we only have landline service there.
Right.
I said, okay, I'll get a landline then. You know, whatever it takes. You know,
game.
So all of a sudden, this guy breaks in on the phone and says, Mr. Robert, we don't do business at all in Oklahoma. And just the phone goes dead. So I thought, man, that's crazy. So I started trying to call it back, and all I get is a phone sex line advertisement. It's just
there
a phone
go.
Talk
yeah.
line saying call the talk line at 800-whatever, and I'm thinking, well, that's crazy. I just was calling this number and talking to Representative Embark. I never seen anything like it, and I've had so many things like that happen.
They're
where,
gaslighting
they can
you. They're gaslighting
yeah, they
like
they,
the old movie.
It's a switchboard where you're really calling that number, but they're transferring you over to a phone sex line advertisement. They did that to me with lawyers, congressional switchboards, any number they don't want you to call, all of a sudden it's a phone sex line advertisement.
They're trying
it's
to drive you over
bizarre.
The
air. It don't make a lick of sense why they would do that. So about 45 minutes later, I'm headed out to a bar they call the Country Palace, and I'm supposed to be picking this guy up, and we're getting nothing but bad rides. I mean, after they had made that, after I'd broke that deal not to call the FCC, I would go out and say do 20 or 30 rides in a row where nobody would be there,
yeah,
or nobody would have any money, or they would all get out and say, oh, man, I've lost my wallet or whatever, intentionally just ripping us off. And I would pull up at a motel and call a number back that had called me for a ride, and it would come over to a voicemail and say, click, click, bang, bang, you know what to do.
Uh-huh.
You know, just we're constantly weird stuff like that. So I pulled up in front of this bar, and there's this Spanish guy standing outside, and, you know, guys go probably 280. He's a huge guy, and he says, I'm disrespecting the wrong people. I never seen this guy before in my life, and I said, you know, what are you talking about? And he bows up to me, and I said, what's wrong? And he hits me on the side of the head with one punch, knocks me out, starts stomping me in the head with some cowboy boots. And luckily, my friend that owns the bar maced the guy right in the eye with some mace and tear gas combination, and the guy gets arrested. I'm knocked out for 14 minutes on the concrete. Please help me up off the ground. And it's the same Brett Moore that every time something had went on, this same officer that told me not to call Channel 5 again there. I mean, the guy is just constantly, him and the Shane McLaughlin, two cops that are definitely bad would be an
understatement. It's almost like a cult-level activity that they just mess with you, you know? It's like they're getting something out of it.
Yeah, entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, that's all it was about, to see how far they
could.
It's almost like I was some kind of weird experiment that they wanted to see how far they could push somebody before they snapped.
Well, they do that to make you snap so that you finally do something, and they can say, hey, he came to the courthouse with a gun, and we
killed
him full of holes.
Right, they want you to get violent.
Yeah,
and they
shoot you down in your front
lawn.
That's exactly what they're doing to you.
That's it. And anyway, so this guy gets arrested for public intoxication and assault and battery. He just happens to be a reserve police officer on the Elk City Police Force, and the captain prison guard, the top one at the prison at the town next to us at Sarah, Oklahoma. And I'm trying to see, you know, to get a police report or anything. I mean, I'm hurt where I can't even turn my neck. I go to the emergency room, and they check me out, and I've got gravel in my elbows. I got blood running out my ear. Hurt pretty bad. And so can't get a police report for several weeks. And finally I thought, well, I'll call Scott Hines with News Channel 4-4 in your corner in Oklahoma City and see if maybe he can do anything about this. And so I called and left him a message. About 10 days later, he calls me back, and it goes straight to the voicemail whenever I'm getting gas at a Quick Stop. And I check the message, and it says it's from Scott Hines. This is Scott Hines from News Channel 4. Sorry it took so long to call you back. You can reach me at this number here. So I picked up my phone and tried to start calling him back, and it wouldn't connect, just like it was when I was trying to call the FCC. So I drive to the local Holiday Inn to use their phone. A friend of mine calls me and says that the police are calling me across the scanner that I'm fixing to be arrested.
There you go.
So I thought, oh, this is great. So I drove my van to my mom's house and called the police. Said, Randy, we need to see you down here at the police station. It's like 10 o'clock at night. And he goes, it's Bob Turner, the head police officer. And I've always thought a lot of Bob. I mean, he's a pretty nice guy. I had visited with him after I broke this deal not to call the FCC. And said, you know, Bob, what am I supposed to do? I mean, we're obviously moving big amounts of drugs. And, some, you know, my drivers were all complaining about it, that we'll go out in the alley, and some guy will get out with a briefcase, and he's only in there about a minute and a half, and we're tired of that kind of stuff. And he goes, Randy, just let them deal the drugs through the van. There's nothing you can do about it. His car does with you. And he says, you know, just run the cab blindfolded. Don't see any of that.
Yeah.
I said, you know, that's fine, but they're trying to make it look like it's my taxi service that the drugs are coming from. If we're all the time doing nothing but drug rides, people are going to think it's us. You know, I just don't want to do nothing but that. You know, I mean, they were controlling the phones where I wouldn't get anything but those kind of rides.
Right.
It was intentional. And so, anyway, I go to the police station, and it's Larry Dameron, Chet Glancy, and two more are in the courtroom at the Elk City Police Station. And I said, you know, what's going on? And they said I was fixing to get charged with conspiracy.
Uh-huh.
And I said, what, conspiracy to meet with Channel 4? Are you out of your mind, you know? And they said, they told me I better give up. And I said, you know, I'm not giving up. You know, I left there, drove straight to Channel 4. And the next morning, I met with them. The power steering pump went out of my van. I had to lay underneath the van in the heat, putting a new power steering pump on it. Finally got to Channel 4. I've got grease on me and everything else, and tried to explain to this producer by the name of Chuck what had happened. And you know, told him that Scott Hines had tried to call me. I really need to see Scott Hines. And, well, he looked at me like I was crazy, you know. So he said, you know, I'll give Scott your message, but it didn't do any good for you to come all the way here today.
Yeah.
And so anytime you're up against federal law enforcement, it's hard to get any help from the media.
Right,
I mean, they
right.
got things fixed to the point where nobody wants to go up against this stuff. And, you know, I mean, that's why it's so easy for these people to get by with this stuff, because reporters know better than to look into certain stories. I mean, it's just that's just the way America is.
Yes.
And so, anyway, I've called Scott Hines I don't know how many times since then, never got much response. Got a lot of the Channel 4 and Channel 5 reporters as friends on Facebook. I've had a reporter from the Carolina Journal help me edit the first part of my blog. The last part of it's written pretty poorly, but it describes a lot of the stuff that's went on. You know, goes on for a while, and all of a sudden, I decide that I'm going to start documenting all this stuff on video and what they're doing to my phones.
Right.
So I start cracking up the video camera, and about September of 2007, Department of Human Services starts constantly showing up at our house and saying they've got a report that child neglect's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And one guy is called the Gestapo of DHS. Quote, one of our local newspaper reporters told me that the guy's referred to as Gestapo of DHS, and I better watch out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I documented as much as I could, and about September 13th, I decided to transfer my phone number onto a track phone.
Everybody's
saying, you know, there's no way they can do that to a track phone. And I thought, okay, you know, I'm willing to try anything. So I transferred my phone number into a track phone. For 10 days, I couldn't use the track phone. But the calls from the local cell phone companies and landlines would still come to the Sprint phone. But if you called me, say, from a AT&T or a Dobson cellular phone or something like that, it would go to an out-of-service. So finally, 10 days later, they got it fixed to where the track phone will receive calls, but half of them are still going to the Sprint phone, so I've got two phones with the same phone number.
Okay.
It's like that for 6 months.
And how did they...
I'm trying to get it unhooked.
You know what? They may have the technology to remotely program your phone, so it doesn't matter if you have a track phone.
They were cloning it.
Yep,
that's
from
exactly
a distance.
What, see, they were pretending to be track phones. The feds weren't all that good with prepaid phones at that time, is all I can think. And they were just, whenever it comes to me, they were pretending to be the company. When it was coming to track phone, they were pretending to be me. They were the middleman.
Yes.
And so there's so much video of me calling track phone and everything else on my my blog. There's a link to all my
sure.
videos and just so many weird noises on the phone, constantly getting knocked off the line, and doesn't make sense, doesn't make a lick of sense how much trouble I had with T-Mobile. And anyway, for 6 months, it was like that. I decided to transfer it onto a landline, thinking there's no way they'll be able to do this to the landline, so I transferred it onto an AT&T landline. Half the phone calls come to the landline, half of them are still going to the track phone. Nobody can get it unhooked. It's like that for almost 2 months on AT&T. Lots of video of AT&T telling me it's never happened before.
Right.
And all of a sudden we're trying to transfer over to T-Mobile out of that, and it's got a phone number attached to it being billed to the Department of Transportation in Oklahoma City. Phone number was 580-225-5617. We've documented that carefully with several operators that it was in fact being billed to the Department of Transportation in Oklahoma City. The landline had call forwarding with a memory. You could pick up the landline and check your voice messages just like it was a cell phone. So many other troubling things. They were just like operators playing games on the other end and try to call 411. But anyway, all of a sudden about October of 2007, this Travis White shows up at my house, and first he came to my kid's school. My kid's 15, gets him out of his class. The kid's a straight-A student, good kid, never been in trouble, even still to this day. Brings him to the counselor's office and asks him how many times he's seen me inject heroin. And the kid didn't know what he meant by inject. I mean, never even drank a beer in front of my kid, much less did drugs. And So they come to my house after that, and he's got a detective with him, which is our captain now. And his name's Kenny Shirey. I always thought a lot of Kenny. You know, the guy's just in a pretty bad situation. If you're going to be the top detective here, you're going to have to go along with certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in my house. They want to know if they can look around.
Said, hey, we just lost you there.
What's going on? So we're out in the garage, and, you know, he wants to know what all this video equipment is I got set up. I got, like, three VCRs hooked together, and I'm going to start mailing out these tapes to the FCC and anybody that will look at all this phone trouble that we're having. I told him, you know, I'm going to stop these guys from blocking my phone calls one way or another. And he says they're going to place my kids with my mother-in-law.
Oh.
And I said, for what? We haven't did anything wrong. You're going to have some kind of reason to do that. And he goes, well, Randy, you got some mental problems that we're going to have to sort out. So my mother-in-law, we're out in the garage at this time, and finally these guys leave. And my mother-in-law and my mom and my sister are waiting at her house to see what these guys are going to do because DHS had already called them.
Yeah.
And first thing they do when this Gestapo of DHS gets to her house, he tells my mom and my sister and my mother-in-law that he smelled marijuana when they was in my garage. But they didn't mention that while we were standing in my garage because there had never been any marijuana smoked in that garage. I was furious when they called me and told me that. I called the police station and talked to this detective, and I said, Kenny, you know that Travis said he smelled marijuana while we were standing in my garage, but he failed to mention that. So we got to my mother-in-law's house. Was there any odor of marijuana in my garage? And Kenny goes, I don't know anything about that, Randy.
Yeah.
I said, man, this is unbelievable that they can do this. So anyway, we're having to go to a counselor at Diversified Family Services in order to get our kids back. And I'm pretty upset about it. So we went to several meetings, and my family doesn't believe all the stuff's going on. I got four siblings and my mom
sure.
just thinks that this is the craziest thing they ever heard. I must be losing my mind.
Yeah, because so in a normal world, this stuff wouldn't go on.
Right. They decide that there's no way the police can be like that here, and I must be having delusions. So they go to this corrupt judge over at the courthouse that had did all this other stuff to us before, and they're going to have me court committed to Fort
sure.
Supply, which is the biggest psych ward in Oklahoma.
Yes.
So I couldn't believe it. So we're at our family counseling meeting, and it ends, and we come outside, and all of a sudden the police are there with the handcuffs and say that I'm being detained and taken back to this Red Rock mental facility.
Yep.
So I thought, oh, this can't happen, you know. So I get back over there, and in front of this Dr. Seroquel, her name's Dr. Ahn, A-H-N, and she's, you can't even understand what she's saying. She's Korean. You know, does
been
a pretty
there.
Good job at trying to speak English, but I can't understand her.
Yeah.
And she finally, she goes, you know, is there anything that, any medicine that we can give you, Randy? And I said, won't you give me some more Invega? You know, talking about this stuff for schizophrenia, just being sarcastic. I was pretty mad about it. And so we get to court, and my mother and my brother's there, and I don't get any paperwork. I got a court-appointed lawyer, and I can take this deal to a jury trial, but I'm thinking the cops did it to me. I didn't thank my own family. Nobody ever told me exactly why I was being hauled off to Fort Supply or nothing. So the lawyer tells me, you know, if you'll just go voluntary to Fort Supply, you'll probably get out in a couple weeks. And I said, you know what? You know, the court-appointed lawyer should have had my paperwork where my family had signed all these statements on me and everything else saying that I thought all these people were after me to kill me and everything else. I mean, they had made up a whole bunch of stuff. My mother admitted to me that in order for them to pick me up, she had to tell a lie that she was afraid of me and considering changing her law. That's what it took to get it done.
Yeah, well, they probably threatened your kids. They probably threatened everybody in your family, you know, while making you look like a crazy maniac.
I had a lot of threats over the years towards my children and stuff, and it's You know, I just don't know what the best thing is to do. So anyway, I go on to this Fort Supply, and there's a doctor there by the name of Dr. Hurd, H-E-R-D, like a herd of cattle. And he's pretty interested since my cousin's the late Carl Albert, that was Speaker of the House and acting Vice President of Gerald Ford.
Wow.
Whenever Nixon got impeached, he became the Vice President of the United States, and he's actually Oklahoma's closest to a president. And I wish he was still alive to ask for some advice on this deal, because what a great man he was. I mean, the accomplishments that Carl Albert made was just, he was a Rhodes Scholar, and so, you know, if Gerald Ford would have got knocked off or anything or impeached, he would have been the president.
Mm-hmm.
So we start talking about all this, and he's pretty impressed with a story, and he tells me that I'm having delusions. And I said, well, Dr. Hurd, there's an awful lot of stuff to be having delusions. I mean, I've got a business to run here. Half my phone calls are coming to one phone. Half of them are coming to another one. That's a pretty heavy set of delusions, wouldn't you say? And he, you know, I get all settled into my room and everything, and I have to go to these little little classes every day where we go through all this stuff on depression and everything else. And so the doctor, after I've been there about a week, I'm like asking questions. I'm making friends with all the nurses, telling them, hey, look what's going on. Now, will you sit here and talk to me for 10 minutes and look at me in the eyes and, you know, do I look like a crazy guy to you? I mean, I'm pretty level-headed, and the nurses started telling me that, you know, this sounds like a real mess. So I started getting the nurses to ask the doctor, you know, what's going on? How much longer is he going to be
here? Where
because
you go.
The guy's, you know, sounds pretty sane to me, and he's been beat up by these guys and everything else to the point where I don't think the guy should be in here, you know, especially a nurse by the name of Linda. I started talking to her all the time, and so I started getting called into this little conference room where several counselors and a couple of doctors in there, and this Dr. Hurd's in there, and he goes, well, you still think that the city manager's involved in corruption down there and he's involved in organized crime? And I said, yeah, the whole town knows it. Now, I'm not mm-hmm. going to sit here and say that I've imagined this.
Yeah.
No, this deal's went too far. I mean, we're going to get a lawyer, and I'm going to sue somebody if I don't get out of here. He goes, okay, go back to your room. I'll see you again tomorrow. 4 days in a row that happened where he says, well, you know, do you still think the city manager is involved in organized crime and they got their own mafia there in Beckham County? I said, yeah, the whole town knows it. I'm not going to sit here and say that I've imagined any of this. No, this is terrorism.
Yes.
So, you know, the fourth day, finally, after I've been in there 17 days, finally I get out. So my brother picks me up, and it's about 70 miles back to my house, and I have no idea my family's did this to me. Still at this point, I think the police are the ones that did everything. My brother's telling me, okay, you know, we don't know exactly what's wrong with you, but you got to take this Depakote and these other pills for your delusions. And I said, okay, you know, delusions, huh? You know, where's all this coming from? I mean, I haven't imagined anything yet. I'm pretty lucky to be alive after what I just went through. I think I'm going to make a story up about the police, you know, getting putting vehicles in front of me with bullet holes in the tailgates. I mean, no lunatic in the world's going to be able to make up a story like this and be able to back it with this many details.
Yes.
I mean, you know for your fact that I've got two phones with the same phone number, and nobody can call me. One of my brothers tried to call me 17 times out of Houston. Finally had to have the operator help him connect the call, and she said she had never seen anything like it. I mean, they knew that my phones were being jacked with. My family was just their prestigious reputation kind of got in the way, and they just wanted this deal to quieten down. I was probably afraid I was going to get hit.
Sure, sure.
So anyway, we get out, and first thing, we're headed back into town. I said, well, okay, stop at this Diversified Family Services. I want to talk to this counselor. So we whoop it in there, and I go in, and I'm pretty upset with her because she should have been able to step in. With her knowing the history of this place, she used to run a taxi service in Clinton, Oklahoma. Her son got into a mess with drugs and knows exactly what how corrupt this place is. She should have been able to say something. I said, okay. I go in. I said, Carla, when's the kids coming home? oh, Randy, it's going to be months. You've got to go through parenting classes and all this stuff. I said, no, we're not going to do any of that. I'll tell you what, I'm going to go home, and I'm going to start calling OU Medical Center and a few more places, and we're going to get an independent psychological evaluation that will put a stop to some of this terrorism.
Sure.
She goes, I don't think that's going to work, Randy. And I said, you watch. I guarantee you we're going to get enough people involved that I'm going to stop some of this. So I go home and start calling around. She calls the next day, and she goes, guess what? And I said, what, the kids are coming home? She goes, yeah, DHS just closed your case. I can't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I can. I guarantee you they went too far. They've broken so many laws, it's unbelievable. And so anyway, on and on like that. So we get on to start calling the ACLU in Oklahoma City to file complaints. I've gotten a hold of this Brandon out of Oregon, Portland, Oregon. Brandon Mayfield was a lawyer that got accused of bombing some trains or something by the
sure.
FBI, and they settled out of court for $3 million.
Yes.
I talked to him, and he goes, man, that's the craziest story I've ever heard. You need to call the ACLU.
Yeah.
So I called the ACLU, talked to a guy by the name of Chuck in Oklahoma City, and he sends me all this paperwork out, and who would have thought they got the ACLU fixed out here, too? You know, I mean, it's unbelievable that they've intimidated or fought everybody off in the state, it looks like to me. So I thought, you know, we filed several complaints more with the FCC and, you know, drove to Hollywood, met with the L.A. Times, 1,500 miles, tried to meet with CNN in Hollywood. I put up a heck of a fight. And so January 2009, called the ACLU in Washington, D.C., spoke to this lady, and I just wouldn't take no for an answer. I just kept saying, lady, these people are going to kill me. You're going to have to step in and help me with this. We've got to get the phone working. I've got a family to take care of. Our house has been foreclosed. Everything
wow.
is going down, and, you know, all the vehicles are tore up and can't even keep an air in a tire. You know, we had 17 flats. I mean, that's just unbelievable. Everything I had, the motors are all locked up because they had put something so corrosive in the gas tank that it rusted the pipe all the way down. The mechanic said, you know, it looked at the stuff in the gas tank and said, I, it must be caustic acid. Whatever it is, it's so corrosive that it's rusted the whole inside of the gas tanks and everything else.
Mm.
So I'm telling her all this stuff, that everything that happened to me, and she goes, okay, you know, I'll try to do everything I can for you. I've got some pretty important people here at the ACLU that they're going to call the ACLU in Oklahoma City and find out what's going on. So about maybe 30 minutes later, the Chuck calls from the ACLU in Oklahoma City and says he's sending out more complaint forms.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Chuck already filled out several sets of complaint forms. I mean, why isn't somebody at least stepping in to stop them from messing with the phone? All they would have to do is just call the district attorney and the FBI and say, hey, this deal's went far enough. We're
going to
start calling congressional oversight committees and everything else if you don't leave him alone. I mean, that's all it would take.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're going to make me push this all the way till the point where, you know, we're going to write a book called Terrorism in Rural Oklahoma. That's next.
Well,
you know, I'm going to end up naming names, and there's no telling
what's going to happen to you.
When somebody gets pushed so far, they will actually start putting some names behind the details. I've got a list of paper with 89 names on it and so many details it'd make your head spin off on who does what, who pays
mm-hmm.
the cops, who works under them. If they want to go that far, I'm about to the point where I've tried everything else. Now, that's the only reason I can still even live in this town is
right.
because I haven't done that to them. So anyway, I get off the phone with this lady in Washington, D.C., and about an hour later, I get out in my taxi service, and I notice there's a police officer behind me everywhere I go.
Yeah.
For 4 hours, the cops follow me. I mean, everybody, all of a sudden, I got the same people that were riding with me when they made this deal with me not to call the FCC. They're all jumping in, putting on their seatbelt and looking in the, you know, all around us, knowing something's fixing to happen. And after 4 hours of being followed by the police, finally I'm taking a friend of mine from one bar to another one. We get almost to where the police station is, and I'm being lit up by a police car.
Uh-huh.
It's this Shane McLaughlin. He just got fired here lately, and they had to dismiss 38 felonies for online police reports, lying under oath, illegal search and seizure. The guys did so many weird things to me. It was unbelievable. And they had to let a whole bunch of other people go because he had done so many bad things to them, trying to make, you know, illegal busts and everything else. I still don't even have a criminal record at this point. You know, I mean, yeah. You think after 44 years in this town and being under investigation by the FBI for 9 years and everything else, that finally they would do something.
Yeah, and they think you're a raving lunatic. And now
yeah,
this
they
is
don't
what
have
they do.
To. Once they get you labeled, they can just kind of play with you.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I mean, anyway, so all of a sudden there's six more police officers show up before I even... you know what to do, and my buddy that's sitting next to me that I'm giving a ride, his name's Alan Hickey, he says, you know what you do, Randy, rob a bank?
Yeah.
And I said, no, I called the ACLU in Washington, D.C., because I'm tired of all this terrorism. He goes, oh, crap. You know, so all seven cars, the cops are behind the door of their car with their guns sticking through the window.
Right.
He's on the loudspeaker to Shane McLaughlin saying, driver, hands outside the window, open the door up from the outside of the van. And I'm thinking, oh, God, you know, what's this about? You know, so I did what he said. I got out, slowly lifted my shirt up, turned all the way around, just like a felony stop is exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Down on the ground, they handcuffed me behind my back, set me face down on the cop car hood, got Alan out, started asking him questions. Started asking me if there's a gun in the vehicle, and I said, no, there's no guns at all, no weapons whatsoever in that vehicle. Well, we got a report. Somebody called the police station, said you were going all over town earlier today threatening to kill somebody with a gun and making threats. I said, okay, if that was earlier today, you guys got my phone number, right? I mean, I've been running a taxi service here for 9 years. You would think somebody would try to make contact with me. You followed me for 4 hours. If you thought I had a gun, why didn't you stop me then? And nobody had an answer for that. All of a sudden, I got this Brett Moore in my face. He starts asking me if I'm wanting to hurt anybody or considering hurting myself. And I said, no, Brett, as a matter of fact, we're going to hurt somebody's pocketbook with this deal if you guys don't quit. And I still got the handcuffs. I'm handcuffed behind my back. And my friend Alan starts telling him if they don't get the handcuffs off right now, he's going to get me a lawyer himself.
Yeah.
So they unhooked me from the handcuffs, and, you know, I'm just beat plumb down after that. Two nights later, I'm at a bar, and this guy jumps in and needs a ride. Somebody had cracked off a couple of rounds out in the parking lot of the bar, and we get over to a town about 10 miles from here, and I'm taking this guy home, and he says his cousin just went crazy, and... you know, shot off a couple of rounds and pulled up to this old gas station where this guy lives, and all of a sudden this guy runs up to the vehicle window on the driver's side and points the gun right straight at my head with the hammer back.
Oh, man.
And the guy sitting next to me, it's his cousin, he jumps out of the vehicle, runs around and punches his hand, knocks the pistol out of his hand and says, man, it's just a taxi driver, and they're all wrestling on the ground.
Oh.
And, I'm thinking, what the heck? I don't know what to do, so I just drive off, and I drove back to this bar, and the bouncer comes out, and he wants to know where the guy went, and I told him. And so you would think that the cops would be wanting to ask me some questions about this.
Right.
The cops told one of the other taxi drivers that I was unwilling to cooperate. Nobody ever, even to this day, contacted me about it.
Yeah.
They was being told to scare me.
Right.
That's exactly the whole thing. I mean,
they want you to set up your own suicide. They want you to set up your own suicide by cop. That's what they're doing.
Man. They're setting the stage, man, exactly. I mean, they could make it happen anytime they wanted, and there's nobody that could stop them.
Yeah,
I mean, that's exactly, these guys aren't through playing.
No.
You know, this is...
They'll do it when they'll push the attempt far enough when they want to, and you... I mean, I'm scared for your safety, and I don't even know you, man. I'm
telling you, man, what a nightmare. It's just don't make a lick of sense on why the police would even want somebody barking this stuff all over the world. You think they would just step in and say, you know, here it is, Randy. We're going to help your business back up, and we're going to nobody's going to apologize. I mean, that's never going to happen in a million years.
No, not for me.
They'll never apologize for any of this, I promise you, man. If I ever get in a position where they have to make a public apology for this, there's no telling what will happen. I called Todd Lamb's office today and spoke to him. He's our new lieutenant governor.
Okay.
And talked to him, one of his people, Eric, I think, for quite a while. And he says that he's going to do some research on this thing. And my wife takes off to Walmart and has my phone with her. He calls back and leaves a message. Here's what it says.
First new message from phone number 405-521-3011. Received at 3:39 p.m.
Mr. Albert, this is Dakota here calling from the Lieutenant Governor's office. Just following up on the conversation earlier, I think the best course of action for you to contact the district attorney. I'm sure you said you already done that. Let me know if you have, but if you haven't, I'd give the district attorney's office a call.
Yeah.
Your district attorney is Dennis Smith.
I already told this guy that. Did you hear that all right?
Yeah, that sounded great. Yeah, he knows you already.
I'd already told this guy that the district attorney had a secret investigator on me. That the guy that made this deal with me that said this, you know, he might knock me off. I mean, they know good and well that I'm not going to get no help with the district attorney out here. I mean, so many years. I bet I've made 20,000 phone calls. There's no telling how many thousands of hours I've been on the phone calling from one FBI place to the Justice Department to the White House to everything you can imagine. Everybody always points you somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what they do. Nobody will ever say, okay, here's what we're going to do. I've got a citizen's complaint form. I'm going to hand deliver that to Scott Pruitt, the new Attorney General. He's campaigned on restoring personal liberties.
Yeah.
Rooting out corruption and protecting society's most vulnerable citizens. I think it's about time for maybe him to hold up to some of them campaign promises.
Well,
now, this thing's went so far that it's not going to take that much to fix this. All they would have to do is call out here to this task force and this district attorney and say, hey, get this guy banned and make this go away or something's going to happen. You know, he's going to name names and we can't stop this story. I've had people tell me that stories like mine always get shut down, but I'll be damned if mine's going to get shut down. I'm going to keep on pushing it till finally they either whack me or my kids are going to get some clothes and some shoes, and I'm going to get me something decent to drive that's going to make up for about 100% to 1% of what they done.
Well, let me tell you something, Randy. I've got a background in criminal justice. I've been a policeman. I've been a mental health investigator. You do not sound one bit crazy to me. Your attention to detail, the way you put the story together, I read your story and you're sticking to it. I've interviewed mass murderers, cannibals, drug dealers. I've been involved in all kinds. In 7 years, I've seen it all, and you do not sound crazy. But I've got some bad. But I've got some bad news for you, Randy. I think what you're experiencing is a symptom, and you're being focused on, but from a much larger problem. This is evil, evil, evil on a very grand scale, and you are dealing with several of the small tentacles in your state. And I've got guys now in the chat room praying for you right now because they're like, they're going to kill this guy. And
there ain't no telling what they're going to do.
And
I mean, that's just, God, I don't know. I just won't give up my business, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
225 Taxi, 821 ACAB.
Yeah.
You know, that's the best numbers you could possibly have. I mean, there's just no reason for us to have to scratch and claw our way through life. I mean, so much misery for so many years, not knowing if you're going to be alive from one day to the next.
Yeah.
The mental anguish and personal injury on this. There's not an amount of money that you can put on it.
Oh, no. You've been a victim of a psycho attack of I can't even. It reminds me of the MK Ultra programs that they've done to create assassins. They're pushing you to a breaking point.
I mean, no telling how many thousands of calls I've made where it wasn't even the person on the other end of the phone that it was supposed to be.
Right.
I mean, you know, you got to at least know who you're talking to when you make a call. I mean, that goes way further than stopping your calls from coming in. And, you know, we're dealing with a bad district attorney, a corrupt drug task force, a police police force that's not really a police force. I mean, there's corruption everywhere, but this thing here that's going on in this town, this is beyond anything. So anyway, I was going to, we only got a couple minutes left. I was going to go into this, what happened with this city manager.
Okay,
he
do
goes
that.
To prison.
Go ahead.
He goes to prison in February 2009, gets 6 months in a federal prison. He gets out, gets a job several different places with some people that are pretty connected in this stuff, and then all of a sudden he becomes the city manager of our county seat 3 months ago in Sarah, yeah. Oklahoma. The district attorney has enough strings that this guy is, you know, basically at the top of, my dad called him an East Coast mobster many years
this
ago.
Is, this is Chicago mob all the way, 1930s. This is Clintonistas. This is like the Clinton era corruption in Arkansas.
Yeah, that's where they've moved this program. When all that went on in Mena, Arkansas, they were looking for a place to move their government drug operation, so they chose Bethlehem County, Oklahoma.
That makes sense.
Now, if anybody's ever watched the Mena Connection, M-E-N-A Connection on YouTube, it's one of the most corrupt stories you'll ever hear in your life. I mean, what the medical examiner did down there and Bill Clinton giving him a raise, it just... goes beyond. It's the craziest story I've ever heard in my life. I was asking the reporter from the Carolina Journal, I'd met her when she was an intern at Cyber News Service, if she could find me a story that was crazier than mine. She goes, oh yeah, what's the Mena Connection on YouTube? I watched it and I was shocked at what Bill Clinton did when he was president, was combine the New York Mafia with Chicago Mafia and the Dixie Mafia, which is the one out here, combined them all three and converged them all into one big mafia where they could get by with almost anything they wanted, you know, created a secret police and just they got everything stacked.
Well, with that, Randy, we're going to have to cut it, and we're going to have you on again if you're okay with that, because I want to hear more of your story. I want to get it out there. Folks, if you missed it, you've got to listen to this. Listen to the archive, Olima. When Olima gets the archive up, I'm going to repost it. She has to edit that dropout that we had when we got knocked off the air. This needs to be sent out. I'm going to send copies of this to everybody I know. So, Randy, thank
Sounds
you.
Good.
We'll be praying for you, Randy. And I will contact you and set up a time when we can have you on. Maybe we'll have you on a few Fridays just to continue this story. I want to get into the Clinton connection and the Mena connection and what your battle is. Folks, you've been listening to
Yeah, Scott. I want to tell you about a guy that came down here to meet with me about this. Hey, thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, we'll do. We'll do. We will add as much as we can to this story. You've got an open forum here, folks. And that goes to Randy Albert out there in Elk City, Oklahoma, and the Save a Cab story. Go to saveacab.blogspot.com, saveacab.blogspot.com. We'll put a link up on the website. Remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but victory belongs to the Lord. And if you're on the side of truth, you've got to keep fighting, and that's what Randy's doing, and that's why we're honoring him and giving him this format. Thanks, Randy. Good night, and stay safe, brother.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone.